News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
It is Sunday, the 12th of October, Anno Domini 2008, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Chris Reich.
Oh, and we need to turn Steve's mic on.
And maybe you should be Robin.
Oh, go ahead. Now, go ahead, Steve. Try it again. All right. Well, you know what? We'll get it fixed. Just tell Steve to yell his name. And I'm Rob Linton.
That's 7 minutes after the hour. We've already lost whatever little modicum of control we had over this broadcast. Yes, indeed, we are once again live on the air. The Bills are doing something.
Oh, they have a bye week.
We have a bye week this week, and then we're back on web only and on Second Life until November, what is it, 16th, 17th?
November 16th will be on again, because then the Bills have a Monday night game. So for the folks that, live in another world.
There we go. Buckle up, he's starting
early. You know, I got to get going on this. We've been off for a number of weeks. I got a lot of stuff pinned up.
Yeah.
But all these folks that have been emailing me and sending all kinds of stuff and saying, where are you? Where are you? You're not on the air anymore. Hello? What planet do you live on?
Well, I think Uncle Dave's rocking chair broke. You know what I'm saying? I think that's what the problem was.
But anyways, I know I've been doing countless emails. What, you're not on the air anymore? We told you way back in, like April.
And it's on our front page of our website.
But people don't read it. They just click on the WHAM website and, you're not there. What'd they do, take you off the air? No. Like I say, back in April, we told you we're not going to be on during the Buffalo Bills season to check the webpage and check the schedule. We've been updating it. We even put up another notice letting folks know that we'd be on this week and that we'd be on again November 16th. Otherwise, you will not hear us live on the air until after the first of the year. Otherwise, we are doing a one-hour pre-recorded show that is aired when the Buffalo Bills are on.
All this with apologies to the members of the choir who did know what's going on.
Now, should we repeat that again?
No, I think they got it now.
We probably will.
We will repeat it again.
But we probably will.
Yeah, in the second hour, just in case those folks that are late coming in, because we are here and doing fine. They haven't taken us off the air. It's just that, the Buffalo Bills are a big draw. I mean, there's...
No, we've said this. We've been saying this for weeks and weeks and weeks, and I think it needs to be said one
live,
more time.
Yeah.
We're very, very grateful to the folks at WHAM, in particular Mr. Jeff Howlett, who has done his best to keep us live. You know, he could have just said, okay, everybody go home until the Bills are done. But what he said was, come in, we'll record at extra expense to them, we'll record a web-only hour, which we will then broadcast when the Bills go live so that you don't lose your audience. So that your audience continues to be served by us. And then on those weeks when we can put you back on the air, we will put you back on the air. And I got to say that God bless him.
Yeah.
He's done a terrific thing by doing that and giving us as much as he could. And I for one, am very, very happy and very, very grateful that he has done that. And I'm very pleased. So for those of you who are complaining about that, you know what? It's the best under the circumstances, and the folks at WHAM, and in particular Jeff Howlett, deserve our thanks. And if I were you, I would send them a letter saying so.
Yes,
send them
please.
An email saying thank you for keeping Soundbites on even as much as possible in whatever way you could. We're very grateful, and you all at home should be too. So let's get. I still don't have a network connection. Is that thing? Have you tried rebooting the thing itself?
Yeah, it's just a switch. It's the other end, somewhere back in the wiring closet.
You traced it all the way down to the floor, and it's not unplugged.
No, we're getting link lights.
Yeah. So, okay. All right, whatever.
Is the DHCP
so we're not going to be able to do a lot of the stuff we normally do on the web, so I even brought the Mac today, and look at that. I got nothing. All right, speaking of Macs, Apple is planning, at least is rumored, to be unveiling their latest laptops on Tuesday. And they may cost less, but analysts say the company's drooping stock has already taken any change into account. Apple enters its fourth quarter against the background of continuing headlines about falling stocks and failing banks, and a September in which retail sales dived beyond expectations. At a minimum, Apple will use the events in its Cupertino, California headquarters to refresh its laptop by updating to the latest chips, and it may also offer new designs. The Apple invitation said only the spotlight turns to notebooks, which may be a pun on their little spotlight application. For searching, get it? You'll be able to search for them, but you'll never find any. Oh, occasionally Apple unveils revolutionary new approaches at such events, but analysts shrugged when asked about the possibility. You won't know that until the day of the event, seems to be the consensus among analysts. Analysts also raised the possibility of a drop in the sticker price for laptops that now start at $1,099, which is more than twice the cost of the cheapest of the Windows-based laptops. Apple Chief Financial Officer Peter Oppenheimer opened the door to speculation as long ago as July 21st during a discussion of the company's computer line. The executive said the company introduces new products that initially cost more because they deliver an entirely new level of value to the customer. Then we ride the cost curves down with value engineering and value manufacturing, leaving us far ahead of our competitors. Analysts were cautious and stopped short of forecasting price cuts. Apple emphasizes design and functionality, but clearly they have become more price conscious as they have become more competitive. So this is our poll of the week, which, of course, I can't get to, but Dave will get to it in just a second. Or not. The poll is, are you ready for a new Apple laptop? And the choices are yes, no. It depends, doesn't it? Wait, Apple makes laptops? Windows Forever and the Linux. And currently we have approximately 73. We have 73 votes so far, so please vote early, vote often, and we'll take a look at the poll again later. So, Steve, what have you heard about all this, by the way?
Well, there's been...
Oh, before we do that, I'm sorry. Before I let you talk, I should remind you that at noon, we have a guest for the top of the second hour of the show. We'll be speaking to a fellow named Mike Pruszynski, who is with LifeLock Corporation. You've certainly seen all their ads that say they will protect you against identity theft, and we'll have him on the show to talk about LifeLock. Sorry, go ahead, Steve.
There's a couple of rumors floating around. One of them is that the plastic-based MacBook is going to go to the aluminum that the MacBook Pro has been using. Whether that's a big deal or not, we don't know.
Some are saying that's a green move. Because the aluminum is theoretically more recyclable than the plastic.
And also doesn't use oil in the process of creating it.
Right.
Yeah. The other rumors are about something that's been being called the brick. And most of the rumors are that the aluminum MacBooks are being milled out of a brick of aluminum instead of stamped out of sheets of aluminum.
That's very common and to be desired.
Well, it's also a lot slower to mill something down than just stamp it out of a sheet. And anyone who works in the industry knows it's ingots of aluminum, not bricks.
Yeah. Well, they would be slabs. The original piece would be size to fit.
Right. So if we've got some of our clients in the manufacturing business and some things like custom wheels are milled out of a block of aluminum, but that just seems to be too slow. Apple ships 10,000 laptops a day. Can you mill 10,000 blocks of aluminum? Not if you have 10,000 mills,
I guess.
Well,
not with one milling machine, but they have enough milling machines to do the job, and it's actually a pretty fast process. Yep. Lubrication of the drill is going on at the same time the drilling is going on, and the that drill is moving incredibly fast. It's all computer controlled, and they all come out identical.
Yeah, some of them are saying
it's
not going to be a typically current milling machine that uses a drill bit. Basically, it's going to be lasers and high pressure water.
Right. Well, it seems to be an awful waste of a lot of aluminum.
Well,
it's recycling
all the inside. All the scrap goes melted back down.
They sweep it all up and melt it back down.
I don't know. That's a silly thing to get wrapped up in. Actually,
bigger pieces than a laptop being milled out of a block of aluminum. It's 90%. You might call it waste, but again, its sweepings are recycled.
No,
you start with
a big block and carve away everything that's not a laptop.
Right. Now, what's the story with? I have heard rumors about a tablet.
Continual rumors about a tablet, something bigger than an iPod Touch, which is basically a full computer now, but the 3-inch screen is a little small for a tablet. There is a company, Axiom, I think the name is, Otherworld Computing, is selling a converted computer called the ModBook, where they take an existing MacBook, rip the screen off, and put a touch screen on it and make it a tablet. But it adds, you know, $1,000 to the price already because they have to start with a fully assembled computer.
Right.
So there's a lot of rumors about that. The interesting thing about rumors is they could all be true. I would imagine there's dozens of engineering projects inside of Apple.
Right.
And who knows which one is or two might actually make it to market.
A tablet would be useful. Lots of people are buying them nowadays. Most people who do don't need them, but that's not the point, I guess.
Yeah, it's a very small niche, but Apple's used to small niches.
The real problem I have is that a tablet would be fine. Putting that touchscreen interface that they've been talking about
that would be on expensive.
It would not only be expensive, but if you put it on a regular desktop or on a regular laptop, you spend all your time with your hands out here like this, and that's very tiring. People aren't used to it and won't like it.
Right.
I mean, we're all talking about the what was the movie? The Minority Report, interface. But most people do not want to spend several hours of their computer waving their arms in the air. I spent many years as a puppeteer, and let me tell you how hard it was the first couple of months. It was not easy to keep your hands up over your head for hours at a time.
That's believable.
And so I just think that it's going to get a bad rep real fast if it starts that way.
In the cartoon industry, they're using these Cintiq displays. They're flat panels. They sit on the table, and they draw on the tablet just as though it were their regular drawing surface.
Right. Yeah, it's a combination of a tablet and a monitor, and they're gorgeous but really expensive.
Right.
Right. Well, and if you have I do that with my tablet PC. I flip it around, I lay it down, and I write and draw on it just as if it were one of those, and that works perfectly well, thank you very much.
And when it is on your desk, you plug a real keyboard into it.
Well, no, I then flip it up, and now I've got a regular computer with a keyboard.
Yeah.
You know, so that's easy enough to do if it's a real tablet.
See,
but if it's just a plain old ordinary laptop that doesn't swivel like that, people aren't going to like
it. But I worry about that swiveling and how much stress it's putting on those wires.
Yes.
We see already with laptops where you've got the hinge on between the top and the bottom. All the wiring that goes through that hinge already will fray and wear out after a couple of years. And now instead of just an up and down movement, you add a swivel movement on it. And that's going to wear them out faster.
Well, yes, it probably will. But that's not what people think about when they
when they get the repair bill and it's $1,000 for a new touchscreen monitor because the wires are all connected to it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
You're lucky if you can get just the harness. I mean, that's very rare.
Yeah, but then it takes longer to tear the monitor half apart to get to the other end of the harness.
Well, yeah, because you got to break down basically the whole machine to get at because it's connected at both ends. The screen's still good, and you got to get the harness. I've got to now take apart the top part of the computer where the screen is, and then the lower part, which are hundreds of little screws down in the bottom, just to get at the connector.
Apple had a model in their titanium-based laptops where the screen was glued together. It was different layers of composite materials all epoxied together. It was a pain to get apart and even worse to get back together.
Right. All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, and I'm delighted to say Rob Litton, ladies and gentlemen. It is 20 minutes after the hour. I'm Nick Francesco, and you are listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Hey, for those of you who are waiting, Microsoft said it will issue 11. That's 11 security updates on Tuesday. The same number it shipped in August when it pushed out the most patches in 18 months to fix bugs in Windows, Active Directory, Internet Explorer, Office, and Host Integration Server. Four of the 11 updates will be labeled critical, which is Microsoft's highest threat ranking, with six pegged important, the second highest ranking, and one tagged as moderate, just lagging behind. As is Microsoft's practice, it released only the most general information about the upcoming security patches in the advance notification it posted Thursday. Among the details that the company provided are the affected software, the severity of the security problem, and the components involved. Seven of the 11 updates will address vulnerabilities that Microsoft acknowledged can be used to execute remote code, a description that generally means hackers could exploit those vulnerabilities to inject their own malicious code into vulnerable PCs, often by convincing users to open a file attached or tricking them into visiting a rogue website. All four of the critical updates with Microsoft's remote code execution label, as were three of the important bulletins, bugs in Active Directory, Internet Explorer, Excel, and Microsoft Host Integration Server were all tagged critical. On the other hand, the patch for Host Integration Server is a first for that software, which is a little-known enterprise product that connects Windows-based networks to IBM mainframes and AS/400 systems. Every version of HIS is affected. Based on the versions affected, the Excel update will likely patch a file format problem, they think. Both Windows and Mac editions will have to be patched, said Microsoft. When this has happened in the past, the update usually addressed file format bugs. The IE patch, meanwhile, will fix critical flaws in IE 5 and 6, but that flaw is only ranked important for IE 7. The most pressing problem is a cross-domain scripting bug in IE 6, which was reported more than 3 months ago. In a related note, Microsoft said last month that Tuesday's updates will be the last for Office 2003 Service Pack 2. And after next week, the company will only support that version of Office as Service Pack 3. So you'll be able to get those updates starting at approximately 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on October 14th. Ladies and gentlemen, start your updaters.
Apple also pushed out 2 security updates this past week.
Yeah, they did. We'll talk about those as well and the ones that are also coming. So our first caller is Ken from Palmyra, New York. Welcome, Ken. What's your question?
Yeah, I'm running Windows XP Home Edition.
Yeah?
I'm the administrator, the computer. We got 2 other accounts limited, and the 2 limited accounts won't let Adobe Flash Player play for some reason. It downloads and everything, and it's there, and it won't work. So it works on the administrator account all right, but it won't work on the limited account.
One of the problems has been with Adobe that when you go to install it, there's a couple of things that could be going on, and it depends on some things. One is when you install it, you have to tell it specifically, I want everybody to be able to use this.
You said all users?
And
it didn't give me that option when I downloaded it.
Yeah, and that's the other problem.
Well, it's not when you download it, it's when you install it.
It's when you run the installer. There's a choice during install that says, is this for you or for everybody? And it defaults to you.
Right.
And if you don't change it to everybody, only you can use it.
So I'm best to remove the program altogether and do it all over again?
Yep.
And be very careful, read every screen and pay attention to what it says before you hit okay or next or whatever.
Right, right. Okay.
But there are some programs that just won't work in limited users, right?
Yes, but Flash should not be one of them.
Yeah, that should work.
Yeah. So give that a shot, Ken.
Okay.
Thanks.
Let us know.
Actually, I apologize. I lied to you, Chris. I do not have that as a thing because it came out last week. So why don't you tell us about last week's updates?
That's about all I know of it.
Oh.
They pushed out 2, which was unprecedented in my experience, 2 security updates for Mac OS X. In my case, Leopard 10.5. They, as usual practice in their case, they didn't tell you much about what they were patching. Even if you follow the links to the website where they allegedly describe it, it doesn't give you much information at all. But I thought it was interesting that we got 2.
It's kind of like Microsoft does similar things. They don't want to give the bad guys too much information about what they're patching either.
So we don't know what the patch was about.
Well, I don't.
Somebody.
Yeah. Address the security issues.
Yeah. Well, security, we see that a lot. And, you know, and I've said this before, and I have to say it again. Mac people need to stop being smug. The security problems exist for Macs. The security updates exist for Macs. And in between updates, you're just as vulnerable as the Linux and the Windows people.
And I've been getting a lot of customers that have been infected with the QuickTime Trojan.
Yep.
Yep.
Simply because they think, well, I'm on a Mac.
Yeah. Right.
I'm invulnerable.
Coming around to bite them.
And that's...
Since it mostly runs on porn sites, they usually don't admit they installed something.
Right, right, right.
Well, the smugness used to be justified to some degree, but not anymore.
No, being too small to be noticeable is hardly something to be smug about. But as Apple has gained market share, as the systems have been realized to be as capable as they have always been, more and more of them are getting out into the world, and now they're a bigger and bigger target. And as they become a bigger target, people spend more time playing with them and checking them out and seeing where the vulnerabilities lie and then exploiting them. And you can't be complacent anymore.
And also the nature of the attacks has been changing. It used to be we'll just take over your computer, run a botnet, whatever. Now it's we want to steal your identity and steal your money.
Right, and that's right.
And presumably...
Theoretically,
Yeah, theoretically, the Mac people have more money because they buy expensive computers.
Right.
There's fewer of them.
We have more money to steal, yeah.
Right. And that's the kind of thing that's very important to deal with. when you have, you have to be careful where you go. You know, congratulations, you're more successful, and I'm sorry, you're more successful.
Yeah.
It's a problem.
Double-edged sword.
That Apple people have yet to really stand up and face. Every Apple person I talk to says, you know, I listen to your show and all those Windows idiots and yada, 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 and thank God I don't have to worry about that. Really, what are you running? Oh, I'm running Windows. I'm running a Mac. Well, yeah, you kind of do.
Yeah.
You
just join our group.
Well, right. It should not be lost on Mac users that a large part of our operating system, now that we're on Mac OS X and have been for years, is open source.
Right.
Remember Darwin?
Right.
Mm-hmm. You can go and look at the source code for a large part of Mac OS X.
Right. Right.
Which is both good and bad. It means that the good guys have figured out the holes and the bad guys can figure out the holes.
Right. Right. And that's the, you know, well, it doesn't work either way. I mean, Microsoft proved that a proprietary operating system certainly isn't secure.
Right.
And Linux and the Mac have proved that an open source operating system is more secure, but when it is vulnerable, it gets patched faster.
And Mac people are in the middle.
Right.
Right.
Part of the issue goes back to the whole concept of security is when the computers were being designed 30 years ago now, security wasn't an issue. There were no bad guys. We wanted people to connect into our computers and share information.
Right.
Have you been following the SOC stress issue?
The SOC stress?
SOC stress. A fundamental flaw in TCP.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, we talked about it 2 weeks ago.
Socket stress.
Socket stress, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we did. We talked about it a couple weeks ago. But yeah, the thing that really just continues to annoy me is how long it takes to get updates. Microsoft only does them once a month.
Well, now there have been some arguments both sides of that. The corporate IT people have gone to Microsoft and said, we don't want patches coming willy-nilly. We want to schedule it. So we know the second Tuesday of the month there's going to be patches. And now Apple is running into the same situation because Apple releases the patches whenever they're ready. But then the corporate people are saying, you can't do that because we have to schedule our patches. We can't test this patch and try to implement it and then tomorrow there's another patch.
Right.
So it's you get hit both ways.
But Apple people who are running Apple servers can store those patches in the server until they're ready to download all at once, can't they?
Right, but
that would be
you
my
never
answer
know,
to them.
Right, and as soon as you're ready to roll out a set of patches, another one happens to show up because there's no schedule as to when they're going to show up.
Right.
But then on the Microsoft side, Patch Tuesday has been quickly followed by Exploit Wednesday.
Right.
So all the patches that
and
don't
so
get
if you
installed,
don't stay up all night testing those patches before you install them and get them installed, Wednesday, you've got a problem.
All this goes to show there's no perfect system.
No, there's not. And they're, it just was a matter of time.
One of the things I like about the way Linux does it, of course, is that many of the updates are for non-critical things.
Right.
Things that are vulnerable, but are not part of the core of the operating system, because Linux breaks the operating system down a lot more than most other operating systems do. So I can test and update things a lot faster, and I can also make a judgment call. You know, they're updating the ls command. Well, I don't really need to test that. If it installs and an ls works, then I win. If not, I start using dir.
Right.
I don't really care.
And
so there's a bunch of that sort of thing.
You have options.
That go, right.
And usually the guy that finds the problem fixes it before he tells anybody about it.
Right. And because it is fully and completely open source, the people who actually do the testing do the testing in an open environment. So by the time they're done actually testing, and they spend 24 hours, they fix it and they test it and they test it and they test it and they test it.
And then they pass it along to another tester.
Right. And then by the time it gets to me, it's been vetted six ways from Sunday by a dozen different people on two dozen different machines. The chances of there being a problem are less.
But then every now and then there's an oversight. Was it Debian that had the secure SSL flaw?
SSH problem.
Yeah, someone didn't know what this block
really
of random gobbledygook was, so they removed it.
Yeah. Oh, that one. Yes, indeed. Yeah.
And then it propagated downstream to the distros that depend on it.
Right.
Well, but it was caught.
Right, it was caught and it was
fixed. It's done by humans. Yeah. Hello.
Right. So I find that's generally okay. Have I got time for another call? Yes, I do. Let's talk to Pete from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Pete. What's your question?
Pete, good morning, gentlemen. I've got Windows XP on a home computer and tried to download a couple times the Service Pack 3. And it downloads fine off of the internet. I've got a fairly fast connection. But when I go to the final phase where it says to install it, it won't accept it. It says it's not going to be installed because it's not complete. Is there something that I should have turned off? I'm running Norton.
Well, what subversion of XP do you have now? Service Pack 1 or 2?
2.
Okay.
You might want to disable Norton.
Completely.
Yeah, because if you've got that full Norton Internet Security package...
I don't run the whole package. I run Spyboot, and then I run Norton only for the firewall.
Shut it all down.
Temporarily.
Temporarily, because 10 to 1 odds, that's blocking you.
Blocking me coming in or blocking me just downloading into the system?
Blocking you from getting it down, yeah.
We've seen reports of the Norton suite, pieces and parts of it. A lot of people don't differentiate as to what piece. Keeping people from installing Service Pack 3. So if you turn off every Norton thing you've got running, I realize that leaves you vulnerable, but do the download.
And then unplug from the network.
Unplug from the network, do the install, and then start it all up and plug back in. That's as safe as you're going to be, but unfortunately, Norton does seem to have that.
Well, it's hard to differentiate between a good program making serious system changes and a bad program making serious system changes.
Especially with the service pack, that's going to do major, major updates to the operating system, so Norton's just being very overprotective.
Right. Well, the question is, really, do I need even download Service Pack 3?
It's a good idea, but do it with...
I'm running Service Pack 2, second, or whatever the most current edition of Service Pack 2 is right now.
And currently, they are still releasing security patches for Service Pack 2, but eventually they'll stop, and you'll have to have Service Pack 3.
Yeah, you can also do a pick and choose, where if you don't want to do the whole Service Pack 3 thing, you can just go into Service Pack 2 and let, you know, you do a custom install and select just the security parts.
Of Service Pack 3.
Of Service Pack 2.
Oh.
Additions on top of Service Pack 2 without going all the way to Service Pack 3.
Without going all the way to Service Pack 3, which is usually Internet Explorer 7 and all that.
I haven't recently downloaded the newest updates to Pack 2 until I saw this, you know, automatic update screen pop up from Windows saying to download Service Pack 3. So there's still patches available on 2 that I can download. Or would you recommend just closing everything down and popping on 3 just to keep me?
All right, close it all down, put it on 3, but also watch when you're installing and updating to Service Pack 3, you'll get a screen that says reserve or save backup copy. Check it, yes. So this way, if you have an issue with Service Pack 3, you have a way out to get back to Service Pack 2 if your machine gets mucked up.
All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites. This is 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
Are we riding the bus?
You know, I've missed playing all this random music on the show. I got to tell you that, because it's been, what, 6-7 months now since I've been in here on the show?
At least. It seems much, much less time for us, but time flies when you're having fun.
Anyway. We're all on board the Omnibus.
We've missed you, Rob.
I know you have.
We love Alex.
Sense it.
We love her.
Sundays,
she's a sweetheart.
There was a piece of your show missing.
There was, but it was you.
And where's that? Yeah, we won't talk about what that piece of the show missing was.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right, right. That's what I'm saying. All right, a Federal Communications Commission engineering report released late Friday essentially backs a plan to create a free wireless internet service by dismissing concerns about interference for existing providers. The FCC has been considering auctioning 25 megahertz of spectrum in the 1255 megahertz to 2180 megahertz band. As part of the rules for using the spectrum, the FCC plans to require license holder to offer some free wireless broadband service. The FCC sees the plan, which is based on a proposal submitted to the FCC by M2Z Networks in 2006, as a way to provide broadband internet service to millions of Americans who either can't afford or don't want to pay for high-speed internet access. But existing providers like T-Mobile USA, which spent $4.2 billion in 2006 acquiring spectrum in an adjacent band, say that opening up the spectrum would cause interference and disrupt service. Friday's report, however, concludes that spectrum could be used as planned without a significant risk of harmful interference. It should be noted that this free internet plan is separate from a proposal to use so-called unused TV spectrum, also known as white space, for wireless broadband services.
Nick, what did you say was the low end of the band they might consider auction?
2155 megahertz.
No, that's the high end. What was the low end?
2180 megahertz.
Oh, okay. I heard it wrong then. I thought that sounded like part of a ham band to me.
No, 2155 to 2180.
Okay.
And I think that's a great idea. Google has been pushing for this forever. They've actually started, I think it's in San Francisco. I didn't pay a lot of attention because it's not here. A free wireless internet project. And I would love to see free wireless internet everywhere.
In most every city, they've tried free wireless. It's failed. It's commercially unsuccessful.
Right. Because it's free.
Right.
Hello?
So where do they get their money from?
What part of it? Well, unless Google starts it. Google can afford all of this, believe me.
Right. So if on your free wireless connection, you got a little ad every now and then, that...
And there you go. What is it that Google is making all their money from? Wait, ads.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And if it's free, there must be, what? No cap.
Oh, did you see in the paper this week, wife was showing to me one of the editorials, somebody from Frontier was touting in how everybody is clamoring for the cap on internet service, that it'll offer them better value for their dollar. That, you know, there's only a few that are really going over the limit.
You just have to envy some people their drugs. I don't care what else.
It was such a corporate line.
How do you spell PR?
Right.
That she was spinning, and I'm positive it was a woman.
B-U-L.
They were spinning such a line of BS. Yeah. Because the first thing I'd be touting is if they're going to put a cap on it, like I've been saying before, and I don't know why everybody else hasn't jumped on this too, is if you're going to put a cap, then you better do a damn better good job of filtering out all the crap emails that I get.
And spam.
All the email, all the stuff that's in those emails, the
ads
videos.
That I don't want.
The useless flash stuff.
And the ads, the useless flash stuff on the web. If you're gonna be Big Brother and tell me how much internet I can have, you better only give me the internet I want.
Yep.
That's the way that needs to work. We're going to go to the phones. Actually, we're going to take Rick from Victor, who seems to have a comment on the Google stuff. Rick, what's your comment?
Yeah, Nick, I heard you talking about Google earlier.
Yeah.
I just didn't know if you're aware that they have like a national 411 that you can dial. It's called Goog 411.
Yep.
Yeah, and you can get information for anywhere for free, and they connect your call.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Yeah, that's great. And I think the free options are wonderful, man. Maybe they'll be the ones to bail us out of this crisis, well, alleged crisis that we have going on.
Right.
You know?
Well,
but yeah,
got
man,
the money.
I love the show, you guys. You guys do a great job.
Thank you.
I wish it was on every day. I don't know why. Maybe somebody should push to get you guys on at least a couple times a week. I mean,
sure, letter writing campaign. There you go.
Yeah. Well, there we go, man. Well, you guys keep up the great work, though.
Thanks,
well,
Rick.
Well, like we've said before, though, Rick, and I know you're still listening. By all means, please write Wham, especially Jeff Howell, and thank him for us just being on Sundays.
Right. Like I said at the top of the show, God bless these guys for keeping us on.
Right, because a half a loaf is better than no loaf at all. That we're still here every Sunday to be able to, whether it's doing it live on the radio or recording it now or right now while the Buffalo Bills are going on. You know, we appreciate still being able to help you folks and be here. So
right.
Send them a letter and thank them.
All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Reich, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 49 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Reich.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 53 minutes after the hour, ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, it's that time once again. Yes, you've missed it for the longest time.
Woo-hoo!
But it's back. All right, kiddies, grab your footy jammies, grab a mug of hot cocoa, sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair, because we don't have to slap them awake. He's been champing at the bit for months. It's story hour with Uncle Dave.
Yes, I'm back! And folks, you know, there's one gentleman that I admire very much, and he came out with a great line. And he turns around to folks and he says, you know, you got to ask yourself, do you feel lucky?
Here we go.
Well, do you? Because, idiot, when you go around and play with the registry like we tell you not to, you're going to get burned. So you got to ask yourself, do I feel lucky? Do you? Huh, punk? Because when you play with it, it's going to mess it up. That's why we tell you every week, don't go in the registry. Yes. You know, And folks will sit there cheering, oh no, I just went in there and looked around. No, you went in there and deleted stuff, and that's why it's screwed up. Because it is very dangerous. When you go into that registry, you know, they tell you, back it up, back it up. Well, I only deleted a couple things. Yeah, they were key things, dork. You know, if you don't know what the H you're doing, stay out of it. Because then you come to me and say, oh, is it going to take that long to repair it?
It's just a simple problem.
Yeah, you know, I only did this one thing.
I deleted
one
thing.
Yeah, that one thing wiped it all out, hairball. You know, this is stupid.
If you don't understand it, ask someone who does.
Back away.
Back away.
Push, you know, you got two hands. Put it on the edge of the desk.
Step away from the keyboard.
And push away. Stay away from it. Because the deeper you go into, the deeper you're running up the bill.
I didn't understand that step, so I skipped it.
Yeah.
I didn't know what that file was for, so I deleted it.
Yeah.
Your ignorance is not what makes this computer run.
Well, what's that sign that they see on garage shop walls all the time? Your ignorance on your part does not constitute an emergency on our part.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
A delay on your part doesn't constitute a rush on our part. But anyways, you know, folks, we can't stress enough. That's why you'll never hear us, any question that's ever asked, walking folks through on how to repair something in the registry. I will not be responsible for it. And you shouldn't be either. If you don't know what you're doing, stay the heck out of it. Please.
All righty. Never mind the tranquilizer.
So
somebody grab him and hit him with a shovel.
Oh, this is
that's
good.
It.
I could just, still go on.
I know you could.
I have never seen my compressor maxed out before until today.
That's it. That's exactly it. All right. Well, there you are then.
This is good.
Very, very nice.
That was 6 weeks, at least what, 6 weeks that I've been?
I know. That's kind of a record for you.
I mean,
you're all pent up in there. No. It's that sort of premature rant thing that you do. We're going to take a break. We're
going to
be back in just a couple of minutes. When we come back, we will have Mike Pruszynski, who is from LifeLock. He will be our guest in the second hour, and he will be talking about the LifeLock system. I want to thank Steve Ray and Chris Reich and Rob Linton. Maybe I want to thank Dave Reich. Not entirely certain. But we will be back on the other. We're going to take a break so that you can get all the news, the weather, the sports, the things that you really listen to Wham for. And then we'll be back on the other side of that with a whole lot more of what we do. So if you're on the phone, please feel free to stay on the line. We'll get to you as soon as we can. And we'll be doing Mike Pruszynski from LifeLock. I'm Nick Francesco. 57 minutes after the hour. It's the greatest computer show in the known universe. And it's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites. Well, we're very excited today. We have a very special guest with us, Mr. Mike Pruszynski, who is from LifeLock Corporation. You've all heard about LifeLock in these days where it is so easy to have your identity stolen. The company LifeLock is purporting to be able to protect your identity on the internet, reduce your junk mail, do all this stuff, and it's only $10 a month. And we've brought Mr. Pruszynski here to give us the lowdown on LifeLock. Mr. Pruszynski.
How are you?
May I call you Mike?
Yes, you may.
Thank you, sir. I'm Nick.
I'm Dave.
I'm Steve.
Chris.
And, of course, that's Rob in the back room who spoke to you on the phone. So please tell us about LifeLock, where it came from, what it does, and maybe not how it works, because obviously you're not going to tell us that, but how well it works.
Well, LifeLock's been around for 3.5 years. We were the very first identity theft protection company in the United States. We came together because we realized that not only was there a void for consumers looking for a way to protect themselves from what's now called the fastest growing crime in America, but also to educate consumers about what they can do, how they can protect themselves, and that there really is an answer so you don't have to become one of those latest victims. So what we've done is we've taken advantage of those laws that are currently in place that allow people to do much of the same things that we do, but we've just automated the process. We've made it a convenience, and then we back up everything that we do with $1 million guarantee that says, if anything ever happened to you as a member of LifeLock, we're going to go ahead and spend the money and the time to go fix those problems and put your life back to the way it was before anything ever happened to you.
So you help us reestablish our identity, get back the money we've lost, those kind of things?
We do, but we found that the system that we've put in place is 99.9% effective to protect from it happening in the first place. There are a lot of different things out there for everybody. That's one of the good pieces of news, that everybody has an option here. But what we've concentrated on is the before anything happens. You know, we want you to put a layer of protection in place that's going to stop people from using your information, then rather than just accept the fact that they're going to get it, they're going to use it, and then leave you with the problems afterwards to go fix whatever happens.
Right, right. Because generally speaking, you don't know if your identity's been stolen until you get the bill,
or you go
to buy something and your credit is bad or whatever that's about. So you help monitor that and help check on those things and prevent it and stuff like that?
We do, but again, we're out there trying to educate consumers that the problem is really a real threat. You know, identity theft has now passed drug trafficking as the number one crime in America. And to put some numbers to it that maybe folks will understand a little bit better, is that you're 25 times more likely to have your identity stolen than to have your car stolen, and you're 40 times more likely to have your identity stolen than to have your home broken into. So if people are going to take the time and effort to go ahead and lock up and insure both those items, why don't they take the exact same precautions when you're talking about the thing that's most valuable to you, and that's who you are, your personal identity. So again, we're out there trying to tell people it's not necessarily, you know, we hear from folks all the time that saying, well, you know what, if I don't shop online, I'll be safe. Well, we want you to understand that your information's everywhere. It's been at every job you've ever had. It's probably been at every doctor's office, every dentist's office, wherever you went to school, to college. You give it to credit card people all the time. So you have to just normally assume that your information is floating around there, and sooner or later somebody's going to get a hold of it and go use it. So then the answer is, what layer of protection do you have in place to stop it or make it more difficult for them to use it?
Right.
Yeah, we've said that for years, you know, trying to educate people about the Internet. You're worried about buying something on the Internet, but you give your credit card to an unknown waiter who walks away with it for 20 minutes.
Yeah, and there's so many folks getting the big scams right now, especially as they're getting, they think, these requests from their bank because it looks official, because they've got the watermarks and everything else, but they don't actually check the URL to see where the heck they're going, and then they've been hacked.
Well, you're right. You know, Americans are moving at the speed of light. And they're always on the go. They've got so many things going on in their lives that they'll get an email and they won't read it all the way through. They'll just go, oh, that's my bank. So they're obviously asking me for something. So we try to leave people with the thought of, let's use some common sense. Let's really think about, would the IRS be sending me an email about some past invoices or about past bills that we need them? Or, you know, would the government be, or would, if, you know, somebody's looking for me with jury duty, would somebody be really sending me an email about that? So those are things that people really need to take advantage. We, you know, we're out here in Arizona where it's senior citizen capital of America, especially this time of year, all the snowbirds are in town. And so we go talk to these communities, and we always have people come up and go, oh, you know what, I got a phone call the other day, and somebody had said that I'd missed jury duty. But if I could validate my Social Security number and stuff, they would go ahead and help me fix the problem so I don't end up in jail. You know, should I have done that? And, you know, so seniors, they're a very trusting community, and, you know, you feel sorry for them. But that's one of the things that we try to leave people with. Just think before you act.
Right, right, right. How did you guys, well, what's the process involved now? If, let's say I get it and I want to protect myself, LifeLock's the way I want to go, what's my process?
We would encourage you to go to our website, but you can also go to our call center, which is right in the building next door to where we are. We don't have to call overseas. And what we do is we would ask you to...
Sorry.
1-800-I-SPEAK-ENGLISH?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's a big deal. We've talked to our consumers. We've talked to people that are interested in having their identity protected. And one thing they told us is, you know, if you have people that don't speak English, if we have to call someplace overseas, we're not going to be doing business with you. So we learned early on that our industry is to protect data. We don't sell data. We don't sell your information. The only thing we do is protect you. So if that's the case, well, then we had to have something that was right here, established, high security. And so that's what we've done, is we've built that. So if you're going to sign up for LifeLock, we're going to encourage you to go to our website or either call our member services, our toll-free number, and then you're going to go through a normal sign-up process where we're going to you know, take your name and your address, everything else. But we're also going to ask you for those, what we call the keys of the kingdom, your Social Security number and your date of birth. Now, understand that we've got the highest security rating you can possibly get for a company, and we have our data spread over several different states. So the chances of somebody getting to you through our system is very, very small. But we're still going to go ahead and give you those, because when we go to place what we call the fraud alerts, which is the basis for our system, on your credit report, you're going to go through and you're going to sign them up. You can sign your family up. You can sign everybody up. But we're going to need that information, because that's what we're going to go ahead and place those fraud alerts. So if anybody goes to check your credit report, to open up a line of credit, change an address, do anything with that credit report, you're supposed to get a phone call first.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But very seldom do we.
Right. So I sign up with you. I get all of that. It's $10 a month, and you guys handle all of that for me? Is that what that's about?
Right. Now, understand that a fraud alert, you can place that yourself for free. We have no problem telling people that.
Right.
Because the thing is, people aren't doing it. They're not doing it themselves.
Right. Right.
There's a normal fraud alert that you're going to place on your own is going to fall off every 90 days. So what we do is, by sign up with LifeLock, every 75 days, we go and renew that fraud alert so it never falls off.
Nice. Cool.
For $10 a month for an adult, we're going to do that for you. We're going to get you your credit reports. We're going to remove you from the Direct Marketing Association list. That's where you get your junk mail. And you're going to see a reduction in your junk mail by about 75 to 80%, because you're still going to get mail from the people that you normally do business with. So you'll still get mail from your bank. And you'll still get mail from the department stores that you use.
Now,
you know, still have credit cards with.
Mike, one question though on that item. Now, what if I have, say, multiple email addresses?
Are you talking about for the Direct Marketing Association?
Yeah.
Okay, this is just the mail that's going to your mailbox. We're not talking about anything that's going to come to you email-wise.
Oh, real okay. mail.
Oh, all right, real mail.
Yeah, real
okay.
mail.
Yep. Right, okay, right. cool.
That's the electronic version.
Okay.
So we're going to do that. And then we also have some things that you can't do for yourself, or it's really difficult for you to do yourself. The first one, which you guys are probably familiar with, is we're going to go out there and scour more than 10,000 websites to see where your information is being sold right. online, if it is, or if it's just being traded hand-to-hand. Because I'm sure you guys have talked about the numerous websites that exist, particularly overseas, where criminals are sharing data and selling data back and forth.
Right. They give you a packet of 100 free, so you can test the quality. You know, first taste is free, and then you can buy them by the thousands.
Absolutely, at a low price.
Right.
Which, you know, we can talk about why the laws in America don't make sense, which deal with that. But we're going to go and we're going to look and see if our members' information is being sold or traded online. And if it is, we're going to find it and we're going to get it removed. The second thing we're going to do is, with more than 46 million changes of address here in the United States, we're going to go ahead and make sure that any address change concerning our members, we're going to go and validate to make sure that's a real change of address. What happens is criminals get a hold of a change of address form, or they'll get a hold of your information. The first thing they're going to do is change the address, so then any bills or accounts that they've opened up are going to come to them. They're not going to go to you.
Right.
And then that way the problem is more hidden.
Right.
So we're going to do that as well. And then the last thing we do is, for all those people that lose their wallet or have their purses stolen, you know, we have a service in place that one call to us and we go replace everything that was in your wallet or your purse. You don't have to spend the hours trying to get a hold of every credit card company, get a new driver's license, new Social Security card. We're going to go ahead and do that for you. And so all that for $10 a month, and
right.
then on top of that, we're going to do everything else plus guarantee it up to $1 million.
Right. So what you're saying is, if the unthinkable happens, if my identity is stolen, my wallet is stolen, whatever, whatever, first there's that moment of panic, and then how do I fix this? And I have to go and learn about that. You guys already know it. You guys know what you're doing. You've got all the processes in place, and you can jump into action a whole lot sooner than I could.
Right.
And more effectively.
Absolutely. A lot of it's just being a convenience for our members. You know, we want you to go live your life normally. We don't want you to be living in fear. We don't want you doing anything different than you normally do. So if you're on vacation and your wallet gets stolen or you lose your wallet, you don't want to spend hours in a hotel room trying to get all these things canceled and replaced. You make one phone call to us, and we do it for you. So we want everybody who's a member of LifeLock to have that peace of mind. We want you to not have to worry about it on the forefront and certainly not worry about it on the back end. So that's why we're here. We've got your back. You don't have to worry about it.
Right. And now I know that several of our users online are asked, your president, his name Todd Davis, I think it is?
Yes.
Tells people his Social Security number.
Absolutely. And on our website, it's part of our advertising campaign, yes.
Right, and we know that people have attempted to steal his identity several times.
Yes.
And you guys cleaned all that up and got it all back. What happened when that happened?
Well, there's been several hundred attempts to use his information. One person actually did get a hold of it, didn't steal it, just picked it up off our website and went and used it.
Right.
They went to a payday loan place in Fort Worth. And what happens is, well, you heard me talk a little bit earlier about the problems with the system, the laws that don't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was, this individual went to a payday loan place in Fort Worth, got a $500 loan, and then also tried to open up a cell phone account and some credit cards. Well, the other ones were all turned away. The payday loan went through because the organization didn't validate. They didn't follow the rules and engagements
right.
that they were supposed to follow. And so when they didn't validate, the loan quickly went through, because those organizations are more interested in getting the money they're going to make off the interest.
Right.
So
right.
it went
right.
through, but at no time was Todd's credit affected. Did he lose any money? Did he lose any time? Because our guarantee kicked in, and we went ahead and treated Todd just like we would any other member.
Right, right.
And that's why we try to tell people, you know what, nobody can stop all identity theft. We can't. There's not a system in place today in America that allows you to stop all forms of identity theft.
Right.
So that's why you've got to have something on the forefront and the back end.
Well, Mike, I really, really appreciate that. It's good to know what's going on back there, and it's good to lay those rumors to rest. This was Mike Pruszynski from LifeLock. That's LifeLock.com. And you can find their website.
We'll
put a link on our website. And thank you so much for joining us today.
Yes, thank you very much,
Mike. For those of you who are worried about your identity, check out LifeLock.com. It's only $10 a month. I don't know how you cannot do that. Cheap at half the price. Thank you so much, Mike. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco. We will be taking your phone calls and more. It's 21 minutes after the hour. We are Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we are going... Before we get to the phones, people have wanted to know, once again, the address and the phone number for LifeLock. The address is at LifeLock.com.
And the phone number is 1-800-543-3562.
Which is 1-800-LifeLock.
So it's amazing how that works.
It's pretty easy. LifeLock.com, 1-800-LifeLock, and you're there. We're going to go right back to the phones. People have been waiting very, very patiently. At least we think they've been waiting patiently, because we can't hear them swearing. Our next caller
Nor do we want to.
Nor do we want to. Our next caller is John from Rochester, New York. Keep it clean, John. What's your question?
Okay. I switched to Time Warner Cable from Time Warner for my internet.
Right.
And after I did that, my wireless router has stopped working. I have had two long sessions with technicians, and basically it's not working even if I have a hard wire directly from one of the ports to my laptop. It worked perfectly when I was with Frontier, and Time Warner says it's not our problem. You got to contact Belkin, and Belkin says we can't figure out what's wrong. Contact your ISP.
Belkin. Here's the first part of my question. If you plug your computer right into the... How many machines are on this system?
About five.
Five computers?
Yeah.
Okay. If you plug one of them directly into the cable modem, does it work?
Yes. Sometimes I have to reboot it two or three times, but it works. It doesn't work right away most of the time.
Well, that's sort of the nature of the cable router. It's, mm-hmm. it's only designed to work with one computer. So you have to reboot it to get a different computer on,
right?
Including your router, because that's also a computer.
Right. Now, in your router, when you originally set it up, did you set it up to take its address via DHCP, or did you put in an address by hand?
You know, I didn't set it up, so I don't know.
Well, I think what you need to do is ask the person.
Or actually... do a hard reset. Look on Belkin's website to find what the hard reset instructions are, and that will reset the router to the default configuration, which should be DHCP.
Right. And unfortunately, I can't get on the net, so well, I can't do that for you.
There's usually a button on the back of it.
Yeah, but there's a soft reset and a hard reset.
Right. So the question is, what's the hard reset for his model number? And if you do that, it'll set it back to the way it was at factory install.
Yeah, there's a button in the back. You know, there's a button, a little tiny hole that you got to set a paper clip through. that says reset, and that will do the factory defaults.
I've done that.
But sometimes you push it once and it does a soft reset. You have to push and hold. The hard reset's different.
Okay, so go ahead. You've done that and nothing changed?
Mm-hmm. No, nothing's changed. I've had half an hour sessions twice, and they're supposed to get back to me with a level 2 technician. But basically, it's not working.
John, one word. Linksys.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
It could be a coincidental failure of the router, but that would be a strange coincidence.
I have had more. I don't know about you, Steve.
Yeah, we pretty much standardize on Linksys and Apple.
I mean, the Belkin routers are, I'm sorry, they're a pain in the butt. They've been our worst nightmare come through trying to get them to configure with more than one computer. I drop in a Linksys. I literally drop it in, quick run around. They all hook up. Goodbye. Yeah. Have a nice day.
One thing to check on is when the router is connected to your cable service, what IP is it getting? Does it get a public IP from Roadrunner? And then what IPs does your computer get from your router? And knowing what those IPs are can point you to a direction, whether it's it's a 169 address or the correct 192 address.
I'm assuming that you can get to the router itself, yes?
Yes.
So in your browser, you can go to the router address and you can see the router and it comes up in the browser.
Yes, 192.16, yeah.
Right.
That's your private network.
In there should be a page, and I don't have a Belkin router, so I can't tell you exactly where to find it. But in there should be a page that tells you what address it's getting from the cable modem.
It may call that the public address or the WAN address.
And actually, in there should be a button for resetting right there. Or and reacquire, sometimes
renew,
they call it. Or renew.
Renew the DHCP lease from the upstream provider.
Right. It may not be renewing that lease, and therefore it doesn't matter what's at the other end because it doesn't look for anything. Even if you're doing that soft reset, it may not be getting it. So one of the things that you can do is to go in and find that page and tell it to renew that address. And that may just solve the problem right there.
So renew the address for Roadrunner?
Right. Renew the address. Well, no. What you've got is there's your machine. There's the Belkin router. And there's the cable modem.
Right.
You get your address from the Belkin router. The Belkin router gets its address from the cable modem. You want to ask the Belkin router to renew its address from the cable modem.
Okay.
Because it leases it for so many months.
Right. And it may be a long lease. Well, it could be a long lease, or it just could be someone, whoever, because he doesn't know who set it up. Whoever set it up may have hardwired it or done whatever. So you may need to go in and renew that lease.
And then make sure all the pieces are turned off.
There's a timing issue involved, too. Turn everything off. Turn all your computers off, the Belkin router off, the Time Warner router off. Then turn the Time Warner router on. Wait a minute or so till the lights stop blinking.
A real minute. Check your watch. Don't think, it's been a minute.
And then turn the Belkin router on. Wait a minute for it to get up and configured. And then turn one of the computers on. Connect it to the Belkin router and see if it can get.
And see if it gets fixed. And if not, then do what we told you and then see if you're on. And then individually bring each of the other machines up and see if they get an address.
And what address they get can tell you where the problem lies.
Right.
So it's actually very important that the computers all be turned off in the house while I'm doing this?
Yes. Yes. Everything should be off so that there's no confusion anywhere.
Because if you got one still on, it's still going to hold on to that address. And that could be causing the confusion that when the other's trying to renew, this one's still holding an old address.
Right. And when you're troubleshooting, the fewer variables, the better.
Yes.
So turn everything off and do what Steve said. Start with the cable modem, wait 1 minute. Turn on the Belkin router, wait 1 minute. Turn on one machine and see what happens.
Okay. Thanks a lot, guys.
Good luck. Our next caller is Paul from Buffalo, New York. Welcome, Paul. How are things in Buffalo?
Thank you very much for taking my call. I've been told that by using on a regular basis this disk defragmenter, not defragmenter, the cleanup, desk cleanup, that it's going to speed up the processing of the computer. And each time I do that, there's a large area that they're calling temporary sync file.
Yep.
Yeah.
Can I remove that as well, or
no.
Do I need to leave
Here's the deal.
And, in fact, the premise is wrong.
Yes. The premise is wrong to begin with. Disk cleanup, defragmenting your hard drive, was very, very important when hard drives were really slow, computers were really slow,
and really small.
And the connection between them was really slow.
And they were using the old DOS format.
Right. Nowadays, disk cleanup is way, way less important than it used to be.
Once
particularly
a year,
if you're running XP, anything from NT on, or a Mac, anything from OS 8, I believe, on, and any Linux kernel past 2.4.
Now, FAT32, NTFS, or HFS Plus on the Mac.
Right. XT3. The basic idea is this. In the old days, fragmentation was a huge problem. Nowadays, yeah, not so much. So all you're really doing is wearing your hard drive down as you run that head back and forth and back and forth and back and forth.
Yeah, the operating systems don't let files get fragmented in the first place, so they don't slow down trying to read them.
Right.
And if they did slow down, it's so much faster now, you don't notice them slowing down anyway.
Right. And the second thing is that sync file is your temporary file. When Windows fills its memory or needs to swap out a program, it swaps it out to that temporary space. And therefore, you have bits and pieces of programs that go out there. It is one single contiguous file if it was set up correctly in the beginning, and therefore never needs to be defragmented.
It's not defragment now, it's disk cleanup.
So disk cleanup is deleting unused files from your computer.
Correct.
The only way that would make the computer faster is if your hard drive is full, meaning less than, say, 10 megabytes of free space.
Okay.
If you have gigabytes of free space, then it doesn't matter if you clean up.
You won't see any difference.
And the system will always think that the sync file is unused because it's only ever used when you run out of memory in your machine. How much memory do you have in your machine?
I have no idea.
Okay, but it's likely that you're not using that swap file space very much.
Yeah, it looks to Windows, the operating system as a different file system.
Right.
If you've got Windows XP, you want at least 512.
Of memory, yeah. What may...
2.0, something like that.
2 gig? All right, yeah. So you got plenty of space.
What may make a difference in web browsing is to clear your web cache files. Because too much web cache can slow down your web browsing as it searches the cache rather than just downloading it to begin with.
Right.
And that would be an empty cache in your web browser.
Right. And in terms of your temp files, then yes, cleaning them up is useful. But how often do you do this disk cleaning?
Whenever I think about it or when something slows the computer down.
Often slowdowns are caused by one of two things. One, it's a perceived slowdown because you're going to somewhere on the internet, which is slow. And two, it's a virus or some other type of malware, which disk cleanup will never, ever fix. So in general, disk cleanup twice a year. The other stuff you should be doing maybe more often is running the Security Tango.
Wonder if he has a lot of background tasks running as
well. If you've got a lot of tasks running in the background, you've got a scanner hooked up and all of those kind
of
things. A camera, a bunch of stuff in the, you know, you've got cutesy thises and that.
The more icons you have in your system tray.
The more icons you have on your desktop, as a matter of fact. Those are the kind of things that slow your machine down. Doing a cleanup of those things will actually serve you better than running some sort of disk cleanup regularly.
I had a machine in. The guy runs a 22-inch widescreen.
That's what I do.
The guy could not find one square inch.
Oh yeah, I've seen those
of free space. It was literally full of icons.
So the more icons you have on your desktop, the slower the machine will run.
So this guy needed a bigger monitor, Dave.
Yeah,
that was it.
You should have sold it to him.
Yeah,
you can make the icons smaller, then you can fit more.
Right. One thing that you can do is to create folders on your desktop.
Yes, that's what I did.
So make one called games and put all the games in that folder. Make one called apps and put all the applications in that one. You know, whatever it is that you've got a billion of on your desktop, put them in folders. Then you've got many fewer things on the desktop and it won't be as sluggish until you open up that folder.
I have probably fewer than 12 icons. I realize
that's good.
That.
Right.
So if you've got a slowdown going on in your system, Paul, then what you've probably got, if it's fairly regular, then it's probably a virus. If it's intermittent, it's probably some website you're going to.
Okay. Now, let's go back to that disk cleanup for just a second. The temporary sync file. Can I remove that?
It's only going to come back.
Well, you can remove it, and Windows will make it again.
Yeah.
There's no
maybe
point
you
in
can
removing
remove it.
It.
If Windows has it open,
it's,
you won't be able to remove it.
It's in use and it can't, wouldn't be able to remove it.
It needs to be there and it doesn't make any point to remove it.
Yeah, it really, removing it is a useless exercise. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Wright, Chris Wright, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Wright.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Hey, guess what? Microsoft Corporation acknowledged on Thursday that exploit code is circulating for a vulnerability it reported 6 months ago, but has yet to patch. It's not clear whether Microsoft intends to fix the flaw next week either. On Thursday, Microsoft revised the security advisory it first posted April 19th about a bug in Windows XP Vista Server 2003 and Server 2008 that could be exploited to gain additional privileges on vulnerable machines. Exploit code has been published on the internet for the vulnerability addressed in this advisory, confirmed Bill Siske, Communications Manager at Microsoft Security Response Center, or perhaps Microsoft Security Lack of Response Center. The vulnerability has a convoluted history. In late March, Argentinian securities researcher Cesar Cerudo announced that he had found a bug that could let attackers bypass some of the security schemes in the new versions of the operating system, including Windows Server 2008. At the time, Sys called Cerudo's bug a design flaw rather than a vulnerability and downplayed the threat. Only after Cerudo presented his findings at a security conference in April in the United Arab Emirates did Microsoft change its tune and call the flaw a security problem. On Wednesday, Cerudo posted a proof-of-concept exploit for the months-old vulnerability. It's been a long time since my April presentation was published, so I decided to release a proof-of-concept exploit. Basically, if you can run code under any service in Windows Server 2003, then you can own Windows. So if you can run code for ASP.NET or classic ASP web applications, you can own Windows too. Microsoft has yet to issue a fix for the flaw since April. Its own move has been to recommend workarounds for customers. Not only has Microsoft not patched the problem, but continued to be noncommittal about a fix yesterday.
Microsoft will take appropriate action to protect our customers, which may include providing a solution through a service pack, our monthly security update release process, or an out-of-cycle security update, depending on customer needs, the advisory boilerplate language read.
Sisk didn't promise a fix in his blog either.
We will continue to monitor the situation and post updates to the advisory and the MSRC blog as we become aware of any important new information, he said yesterday. Harumph. Harumph.
Doctor, it hurts when I do this, so don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that. Exactly. Exactly. We don't need to fix it. You just need to stop walking on it. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bob from Brockport, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
I've got one. I have software for my HP printer, and I'm trying to make a half page. I've been doing it for 2 years, doing my invoices.
Yeah.
About 5 or 6 weeks ago, doing an invoice, it would only give me one solid full page to take time coming out of the printer. I use the printer sometimes just to print something off screen. I can get a half page. But my invoice software shows two printers going to be printed, so two pages, half page going to be printed. And all of a sudden, the full page comes out. I look back here, it still says two-sided, you know, half page. And I've tried everything. I've called the company up. They want $39.95 to be able to answer the question, or they'll send me another printer. I'm trying to ask whether it's the software for my invoices, or I put my HP printer software back in. You know, I took it out and put it back in when it didn't work.
Bob, you said it worked at one time, right?
It still works now only because I use the printer software only to make two sides. I can take something from the screen and get two sides. As soon as I use my software for my invoices to print it, it shows half page, and yet it only prints a full page.
So you get, instead of printing front and back half a page each,
right,
it prints everything on one page.
Right. I can't get 12, you know, like wallet size at 12.
Right.
Correct. All I want is a half page.
What has changed?
Yeah, do you remember what changed since it worked to it didn't work?
All of a sudden it wasn't working, so I went ahead and kept on trying, and all I did was, it's got to be the printer. So I put my disk in and reinstalled my printer.
One thing you may want to do is, instead of using the disk, go to HP's website and download the newest driver for that printer, because the disk is most likely old.
But I do get my half pages when I use the printer icon.
In other programs.
Correct. But anything, as soon as I put my invoice software up there, run an invoice, hit the printer button, it comes out full page.
That could still be a driver.
Is this invoice software some special program, or are you running this out of Word, or where is it from?
I bought it in a box, and I've had it for 4 years now. And I run my invoices on it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And should I go out and buy another?
Well, before you do that, check the invoice software and make sure that the printer driver there has not changed.
Okay.
Right? Make sure it's connecting to the correct printer.
And the
not
page
an HP-like printer, but the real HP printer that you have, so it will use the correct driver from the system. And also, again, as Steve just said, make sure that the setup hasn't changed. You see, if you did some changes to the printer software, your invoice software may have said, oh, that printer's not there right now. I better use the generic driver.
Yeah, default.
Okay. Now that might be it. They certainly wouldn't help me at HP with this.
Right. So what you need to do is essentially reset up your invoice software.
Yeah.
No, treat it like it's a brand new program you put in with a brand new printer.
Well, if you can, you know.
See if they have any updates to the invoice program.
Back the data up, uninstall the invoice program, try reinstall.
Well, you should just be able to do a setup without having to do a reinstall. Yeah. At any rate, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, you, 49 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, 1180 WHM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 53 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Hal is on the phone from Brockport, New York. Welcome, Hal. What's your question?
Hello. I sometimes run AVG, and it shows recycle file and temporary internet files, and I would like to eliminate those, but when I use a regular search, sometimes they don't show up.
Well, you really don't want to eliminate them.
Yeah.
The recycle file is your trash bin.
Because it slows the computer down a lot, and then I'll reinstall anything that I need to.
You can't remove your recycle bin.
No, you can't.
You can empty the contents of it.
And if you empty it, then it doesn't take any time to be checked.
Yeah.
How much stuff you got in your recycle bin?
Quite a lot. It keeps growing.
Yeah, you can empty that. You're not using that to store stuff, are you?
No.
Okay, then you can empty it. Right-click on it and say, empty the recycle bin.
Okay.
And then all that stuff will go away. You get back acres and acres of disk space, and AVG won't take any time at all to look through that file.
How do I get into that if I'm not in AVG, or do I do it from AVG?
No, that is the recycle bin in your...
On your desktop.
On your desktop.
Oh, okay.
The Windows recycle bin, the trash can in Windows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then, as far as the other one goes, what was the other one?
Temporary internet files.
Temporary internet files you can empty through your internet. You're using Internet Explorer, aren't you?
Okay. Another quick question. I would like to put a slideshow on the desktop. Is there a way of doing that?
As the background?
Yeah.
Yes, there are programs that will allow you to do that. No one here on this panel, on this entire radio show, will vouch for whether or not they are good programs or bad programs. And by bad, I mean have some sort of keystroke logger or whatever in them.
I got to say this,
it will slow your machine down.
It's easy on the Mac.
Right, that's a feature built into the Mac.
Right, I can do it on the Linux, too.
Microsoft doesn't have anything like that. I have to go to another vendor, right?
Right.
It will slow your computer down significantly as it loads those new background pictures.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Good enough, then. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Hal.
You can set your screensaver as a slideshow, and that's built into Windows and Mac also.
All right, we've got about a minute for Chris from Greece, New York. Welcome, Chris. What's your question?
Gentlemen, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Hey, for the previous caller, just a quick note that I've noticed on a lot of computers that I support, and that is that the Windows default for the recycle bin is set at 10% of your hard drive.
Right.
Which is huge these days.
Well, right. Back in the day, it was not that much.
Right.
Yeah.
But when you've got 200 or 300 or 400 gig drives, you're setting aside 20 or 30 gig of space for garbage.
Right.
And I always recommend people set that at like 1 or 2%, and it will free up some drive space, and it'll reduce the amount of garbage that they collect.
Excellent point, Chris. Yeah. Thank you very much.
You go to 1 to 2 times the amount of available RAM as well. That's a number that works.
One thing we should mention again before we boogie on out of here is, for the next few weeks, folks, we will be recording a one-hour show that will be played on the web stream during the Buffalo Bills games.
When the Bills game starts, you go to the web stream, and there we are.
And
thank you.
We won't be back on the air until November 16th. So save the date. We will be back here live. Otherwise, we will be doing a one-hour stream for the webcam during the Buffalo Bills game.
The Bills game start about 1 o'clock, so that's when the stream will play.
And then we're usually on the web in Second Life around 11:30 for a 1 o'clock game, 12:30 or 11:45 for a 1 o'clock game, and 12:30 for a 4 o'clock game because we usually have to go to our houses.
Right, and that's all predicated right now this week. We're getting no internet connection in here, so it may well be that next week we come in here, there's no internet connection, and then we have to go home before we can get on the web. So, again, you know, we're a little loose on when we actually hit Second Life.
So check us out, and then we're always there every Friday night at 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.
So you can join us there, and those are the kind of things that we handle. We've been branching out. We're not, I hear this all the time. Why have you stopped doing this, or why are you doing this instead? We're not actually in the process of stopping doing anything we're doing. We're adding things to what we
yes.
do. Being in Second Life has allowed us to add users who we've never been able to reach before. And
other countries.
They will
and
bring
my poor
other
wife
users
is so
in.
Upset.
That
I'm doing more things.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, mine too, for that matter. But that's the idea, and we're not, you know, stopping doing things. We're just adding stuff to it. Right now, we do the show. We have the forums. We have the IRC chat, and now we have Second Life. A lot of the same people show up in all of them, but a lot of the other people who are there actually are new to us, and that's the kind of thing that we're very interested in maintaining,
trying to
branch out and trying to get new people to join the Soundbites family. All right, we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, who just every week, not that bright a guy, comes in here every week to give us his expertise and his abilities and to record the sound, to record the webcast, the podcast, which this week will be essential since we're not on the web and there's no other way most people are going to get it. And then, of course, Rob Linton, who found his way to the studio. Unbelievable this week. He actually managed to get here. I couldn't be more thrilled and annoyed by that fact. I'm Nick Francesco. It is 59 minutes after the hour, and we want to thank you for listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.